I'm Max Kohler, and welcome to Sacred Legions. Waking up to horrific news can make it feel like bad actors control our lives. Fortunately, despite these shockingly indecent times, Kurt Vonnegut reminded us that there are secular saints that do behave decently and bring light into the world. Today, I have the great fortune of speaking with Christopher Kendall Olson from Welcome to Housing, a not-for-profit enterprise in Maine that sprang from a 40th birthday wish to do good. Welcome, Christopher.
Well, thank you so very much, Max. Actually, it was the 50th birthday wish, because of the 40th, we raised money for the shelter in Bangor, the Greater Bangor Area Homeless Shelter, and had so much fun 10 years later in the summer before my birthday in October. I called up Dennis Marble. And to give you a background, Dennis is a great guy. He's retired now. I am very much of a chatty Cathy Ricochet Rabbit. He's very kind of stoic. But when I called him up, he was very excited to have me come in. I had no idea when people move out of the shelter that they get to an empty apartment. They have no bed. They have no kitchen table. They have very, very little. And what they were doing with the grant program was giving them a $25 gift card and helping with security deposits. And you could go back to the 1800s, and $25 doesn't do a lot. So, and I was really amazed, because I was thinking, my gosh, you know, you're starting over from shelter. You want to go for a job interview, and you've been sleeping on the floor. You've been eating nothing but fast food. You're not going to look and feel your best. It's kind of like Arlo Guthrie talked in Alice's Restaurant about going to the draft board after staying up all night drinking. And all the stuff I've been through as a kid, from being messed with by a doctor to being bullied and having PTSD and so forth, the one thing I've never had a problem with is want. I've never wanted for a warm bed, a meal, or a roof over my head. And I see some of these people, and it blows my mind. A number of years ago, there was a news story about a guy that was asleep in a dumpster, and he almost got picked up by the truck and compacted. And one day we had a couple of guys come in, and the guy looks at me and goes, "Remember that guy that almost got, you know, taken away in the dumpster?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's like amazing." He goes, "That was me."
Wow.
And unlike a stereotype, this guy was clean, was well-spoken. And I'm thinking, my God, how did he end up in that situation? One of the very first people we helped, it was wintertime. I wrote a Christmas poem that year, and this guy looked exactly like Santa Claus, real beard, real white hair. And all of his worldly possessions were in a great big trash bag. And I was helping him get to his apartment. We'd given him a bunch of stuff. And on top of the trash bag was a really nice vinyl folio. And I just peeked at it. It was his college diploma. And I don't know about you, but growing up, it was always, oh, you know, if you don't get a college degree, you're not going to go anywhere. I don't have a college degree. But I'm thinking, my God, here's a guy that's really smart, obviously. And now he's down to a trash bag of his stuff. He's starting all over again. It just blows my mind how people go through some of this stuff and just don't lose their mind. Seriously.
So you said, or I noticed in the write-ups that you sent, so your 40th birthday, you were right. You had the idea of helping people. And I think you and a friend got together and just collected money for helping the unhoused, right?
My fourth little brother from Big Brothers Big Sisters. It's interesting how it started, because we now help, one of the populations we help are people coming back from corrections. Well, I was helping a friend's ex-husband who had an alcoholic blackout, and he was originally from the Augusta area, and he was at the Bangor pre-release. And his ex-wife said, "Daryl doesn't know anybody. Would you be willing to help him?" I'm like, "Sure." So it was like a mentor situation with a guy that was older than me. And my wife and I had been talking about Big Brothers Big Sisters. And she looks at me and she goes, "Daryl's a convicted felon, right?" And yeah. "If you can help him, why can't you help a kid?" "I don't know." So I was matched with four littles over a period of 18 years. And my fourth little and I composed a letter, put in a photograph on the letter of us playing basketball. They did a feature story in the Bangor Daily News about Big Brothers Big Sisters, front page above the fold. It was a great article. I still need to dig it to Staples to scan it, because it's darn big. And we ended up raising $7,300. We ended up getting over $5,000 from Walmart. I almost hung up on the guy on Saturday morning. I get a call. Guy keeps saying, "Mr. Olson, Mr. Olson." I'm just about to hang up. And all of a sudden I hear, Chris, it's me, Jose." "Why did you say so?" Jose Vega was a volunteer of mine when he was at Husson, and he was the manager of Walmart. So we did Black Friday. And then there's a friend of mine in radio who's one of those beautiful, rich voices. His name is Nelson Jewell. He used to work at Huston. He calls me and goes, I got one of your letters, and we're going to have the Harlem Rockets come and play, and we're looking for a charity to give the money to. We'd like to give it to the shelter. And I'm like, that's great. I said, what's a Harlem Rocket? Oh, it's like a poor man's Harlem Globetrotters. And my fourth little got to actually play basketball with them. He even got picked up by the center while he was trying to make a foul shot. I took pictures because he went to school and nobody believed him. It's like, here's a handful of photos. This is you playing basketball. So 10 years later, I think it was in the summer in June, I called up Dennis Marble and I said, I had a ball. That was a lot of fun. They loved it too, because $7,300 out of the blue was just not, doesn't happen every day. And he said, you got to come in. And I went in and he told me about the people coming out. Well, the community of support up here. I love Bangor. I'm a Jersey boy. Moved up when I was 12 to the coast. Explains a lot of bullying. Imagine Joe Pesci and Tim Sample hashing it out. And what happened was the program just took off. It really grew in a hurry. And Dennis decided that he really would like to see us. You know, I wanted to see us help everybody, not just people coming out of the shelter. It got to the point where we had more stuff than they had people coming out into housing. So as of May of 2012, we went out on our own in terms of helping everybody. We were under the shelter's financials for 2 years. Then when we started talking about grants, and I think it made Dennis a little nervous because they're always applying for grants. So we ended up going under Adoptive and Foster Families of Maine, who I used to work for. I've worked at a lot of jobs. That's how I educated myself. I worked in nonprofit. I worked in radio for over a dozen years. I did announcing. I did news and so forth. And all these different little things along the way made it perfect to start something like Welcome to Housing. And honest to God, I worked for March of Dimes, American Cancer Society, Adoptive and Foster Families of Maine and Kinship Care. And I volunteered ever since I was a little kid. I have never been in a situation where volunteers come out of the woodwork. Today, we had a $250 check dropped off by a volunteer who I met once at a Chamber of Commerce event. He now heads up our fundraising committee. We have had so many small world stories I'll tell you about later, too, that just defy coincidence, including on the anniversary of our program a number of years ago, Cadillac Mountain, it's my birthday, trying to find a parking place. There's a car on my back bumper. I start to go all Yosemite Sam, and this guy walks up out of nowhere, waves the car around. I park it. I couldn't give him a card fast enough. And at the time, I was still doing real estate. I said, here's my cell number. If you get lost or have any issues, call me. He's from Minnesota and Maine for the first time. So about 15 minutes later, he comes across the mountain running, waving my card in the air because Welcome to Housing is on the back. He said, I volunteer for something like this in Minnesota. And that's pretty cool as it is.
Yes.
So my wife and I got back to the car later, and there's a brochure under the windshield wiper. She's like, ooh, ah. She's like a not only fast reader, voracious reader, just reads all the time, just amazing lady. And I'm like, what? She goes, that's not just a furniture bag. It's the largest one in North America. Really? Really. It's called Bridging.org. It was started by a man who passed away a few years ago in his 80s, who was at a church. And somebody brought in a crib that needed some TLC. He fixed up the crib, gave it away, and all of a sudden the epiphany comes. And he's like, why aren't we doing this with other stuff? Now they have two great big warehouses up in, I think it's Minneapolis, and they offered to mentor us if we needed it. And in 2017, we went out on our own. We are under the wing of Adoptive and Foster Families of Maine. Beth Hoxie, who founded the organization, had mentored over 200 kids, had adopted, I believe, 6. Great lady to work for. And she announced she was retiring. Everyone's like, oh, nothing's going to change. I'm like, oh, yes, it is. When a person that starts something walks away, you're going to end up having to have several other people come in and try to figure out what the heck they did. So we talked with our accountant, Melinda Workman, down Bar Harbor. And the forms is like this, I mean, like almost 3/4 of an inch thick of paperwork. She looks at me, she goes, okay, the only organization that needs to fill this out completely is a teaching hospital. Now, you're not going to be a teaching hospital, are you? Nope. So we went out on our own. And to use the term bank, whether you're a food bank or a furniture bank, or in our case, we call ourselves a home goods bank, you have to call the financial bureau at the state. I talked to a guy who's about as emotional as Joe Friday on Dragnet, and very dead serious, very stoic. And right before the conversation ends, you know, we got permission to use the term bank. We promised we wouldn't be loaning out any money. I said, well, we do give away toasters. They're generally not new. And he just cracked right up. But we actually own our building now, thanks to Stephen and Tabitha King, their foundation. We're putting in a solar array in a few months that'll cover 70% of our electricity because we use heat pumps. We are really, really blessed. You know, we've had University of Maine students, Huston University students, all kinds of people helping us. As a matter of fact, a narrative was written by the University of Maine technical writing class for a grant we got from the Narragansett Number One Foundation. They got their money from a Powerball. The husband passed away. The wife is still around. And you get everything by mail. Nothing online. You get everything by mail. And when I heard there was a letter from Narragansett Number One Foundation over at the UPS, I'm like, oh, great, another rejection because we had just been turned down by another grant. I waited a few days. I go over there. They bring it out to me because of my mobility issues. It's really thick. I open it up. First piece of paper. We're happy to announce.
That's always a good sign.
If you're being awarded $20,000, please fill out the paperwork and mail it back to us. And God love her. No big honking scary bank check, right? It's a little personal check that she sent for 20 grand. And one of the things that we learned from that grant narrative that these students wrote, it showed that if a person's moving out of a homeless shelter and they go into an apartment and they don't have the basics like a kitchen table or a bed, all these little things that you and I take for granted, they are 50% more likely to be back in that shelter situation within 12 months. And if you're talking to somebody that's completely fiscally minded and monetary, it's a lot cheaper to get somebody housed. It's like with medical. It's a lot cheaper to get a annual checkup than to show up at the ER. You know, ER is going to cost a lot more than having a provider. This society still needs to learn that prevention costs so much less than waiting till something reaches a traumatic stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I was interested too. I saw the picture that you sent of the warehouse, and I don't think anybody seeing that picture would think warehouse. To me, that looked like a beautiful Victorian Maine house, but it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. And it is not only when we got it, first of all, we walked through it. We were in the back of Old Town Plaza. Carol Epstein let us in there for free for 4 years. She had another tenant that wanted to break through from the front part of the shopping center to the back. She's all apologetic. I said, don't apologize. You let us in here for free. Heated, loading dock, free for 4 years. I said, no, that's great. It proved that we could do this. So we were looking around, another small world story. And Rhonda Savage, who used to work for PCHC, said, you need to talk to the guy that handles all the buildings. And I said, what's his name? She goes, Ed Marsh. I'm like, that's interesting because there was a gentleman named Ed Marsh who volunteered for me at the Sheriff's Department up in Piscataquis County. That's this Ed Marsh's father. The father who volunteered for me used to bring me March of Dimes stuff that said, the new March of Dimes preventing polio, arthritis, and birth defects. And I look at him and go, where'd you get this stuff? He goes, oh, we got it when my father and I, in other words, the father and grandfather, volunteered in Middlesex County. So that was one thing. Then we're walking through the house, and I looked at Ed, and I said, how much of this house we can use? Because we had people saying, oh, here's a couple of pallet spaces. I was like, no, no, we need more than that, because the place we were leaving was 2,267 square feet. We had to have a guy come and clean it out so we'd get a good reference. He actually had to bring a chainsaw because somebody brought a great big rolled-up rug that, no exaggeration, was like the length of a telephone pole and thicker. And wow. So you can not only, you know, use the entire house, you can even remodel if you want or renovate. And I love older houses. I grew up in a house as part of the Underground Railroad as a kid. And yes, it was haunted. The fun thing was, a few minutes later, I'm like, oh, what the heck? You know, I'm not shy. What what are the chances we could acquire something? Oh, we'd love that. Originally, they were going to build out that building larger. They bought it from Dr. Christopher Ritter. And what happened was the Helen Hunt Center opened up, which is a beautiful brick building up behind there in Old Town. They moved everything up there. So the building we have now was empty for two years, I think, over 2 years. And we ended up getting it for $25,000. The plumbing was shot because of the pipes had frozen. So we put in PEX. We have three heat pumps. We're going to get solar put in there, covering 70% of our electricity. But the building has a metal roof, newer windows, newer siding, and it's a huge lot. And of all the code enforcement people I've ever worked with, a guy by the name of David Russell is a code enforcement guy in Old Town. I hope to God he never retires. He is one of the most chill, relaxed guys you'd ever want to meet. We can actually build onto the building. We could build a large garage. We could do this. We could do that. And we own it outright. The only thing we have to pay is utilities and insurance. So we're very fortunate there.
Yeah, that is a big advantage. I've really been enjoying, throughout this conversation thus far, the word volunteer has come up several times. And not just with your organization, but with other organizations. It's like volunteerism has dominated your living. And I appreciate that because that's a big part of what we're trying to encourage with Sacred Legions is just get into your community and help out. And it just makes a world of difference for you and for the people around you.
And it can build your skills and you'll find a lot of people. I love when the light comes on. We had a couple of young men from Huston who gotten in trouble. One of them was from Japan. And after he did some community service work for us, he had to fly to Tokyo to go to a sister's wedding. And right after the reception, the same day, had to get back on a plane and fly back from Tokyo. But with him and some others in the past, oh, we have to do community service. It's like, oh, ho-hum. You get them volunteering. They realize it's fun. They can be creative. They get to use their noggins. And like the light comes on, they're like, my God, this is fun. I used to get picked on because I volunteered. I used to collect money for UNICEF. That was my first gig at Halloween. And I took great pride in all the masking tape they had to put on the orange cardboard box because it was so stuffed with change. And I remember at least one occasion where my mother and I were baking cookies to send the soldiers over in Vietnam. I mean, I grew up watching the news with people over in Vietnam, young people over there. But there's so many good things that come out of volunteering. And it feels great, too. You know, I have to be honest, when you can help somebody, we had a lady contact us. She said a couple that we're representing, they can get full custody of their kids. They're only lacking two things, two twin mattresses. Do you have a platform bed? Yeah. Okay. Where's the closest Walmart? We ordered them. They picked them up. They're good to go. I had an amputee call me. She said, can I get a mini fridge? We ordered a mini fridge. We're going to go after grant money specifically for adaptive. But when her caregiver's not there, the fridge is on the wrong floor, of course. I had a call from Washington County. A lady had a woman escaping domestic violence. She had two kids. One was a baby. And she was helping this lady. And I said, you know, for our outgoing form, we need to know the age, how many people in the household, whether or not there's a veteran, blah, blah, blah. What agency are you with? Oh, I'm not with an agency. I'm a insurance broker. Oh, yeah. She said this lady needed help. I decided to help her. You know, nice. It's incredible. One of my favorite ones was a child safety seat, 4:30 in the afternoon, Penquist Cap. Their lines were shut off for the weekend. HHS was out of child safety seats. Lady calls me up. I meet you at Brewer Walmart. So I'm over at Brewer Walmart, found the absolute perfect child safety seat. There were the associate. My phone rings to pick it up. It's a lady. Where are you? I'm in front of the child safety seats. Where are you? Me too. I don't see you anywhere. She went to Bangor. I said, I'll go look at the Hot Wheels. I started collecting back in 68. I'll go look at the Hot Wheels and just give me a call when you get over to Brewer. So we were able to do that. We had a microwave shipped to a lady who said that's the only way she could cook. I got to her the very next day. We're filling in gaps. There are so many people out there, and the demographic is anybody and everybody. We have people that are starting over from shelters. We help sober living homes. We help people displaced by domestic violence, by natural disasters like house fires. Here's the story I almost forgot. When we had Channel 5 come over to the place where we were in Old Town, behind the shopping center, I put the word out to the board that we needed somebody to interview. So I get over there, and there's a young man and his adoptive father. His name is Jack Patrick is the adoptive father, and David Patrick is his son. And he reminded me of Pele. He's originally Haitian, and he always had a soccer ball. When I worked at the museum, his mother was a board president, always had a soccer ball on his head. So I get there, I'm like, hey, Old Home Week, how are you guys doing? Great, what's up? Oh, we lost everything in an apartment fire. We're here to get some stuff to start over again. And we understand that they needed somebody to interview, and they looked at me. What are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm the chucklehead that started this organization. It was great. It was humbling, but it was great. And that young man, David Patrick, is now down in Lewiston. He and his wife, they have two kids. They have the adoptive father. They were finally able to buy a house. And he's got several degrees. Brilliant young man. And I'm just so proud of him for what he is and what he's done with his life. And his wife is now, I believe, a registered nurse. I mean, just they got the American dream. He was convinced because of his skin color, unfortunately, that he didn't think he'd be able to get a house. I'm like, no. I got him in touch with a mortgage broker. It all worked out. It's wonderful. I just retired from real estate, and I'm glad I did. It's heartbreaking now to know the median price of houses in the state of Maine and how many people are out there that no way in God's green earth are you ever going to be able to get into a house. And we rented for 13 years, and I was the answer to the $64,000 question. That's about how much we paid in rent. We had a good landlord and all. But I can't imagine going through that now with the median price going up to, what, 400 and something thousand. It's absolute insanity. President Obama, I think, was one of the first ones that really realized and was open about the correlation between people having their own home to having stability with everything. You know, you get into your own home, all of a sudden the insecurities and all that go away because it's your place. You're still paying the bank, but it's your home. You can paint a wall. You can change out your steps and do whatever the heck you want, you know. And I feel so bad that there's so many people out there that can't attain that. I think it's horrible. If I were to have the money of some of the billionaires out there, I would love to go around and buy up the city houses and see them renovated. I actually contacted the congressional delegation a number of years ago. Habitat for Humanity is wonderful. They build houses from the ground up. My suggestion was, why doesn't the program buy some of these houses? Because they've already got water, they've already got sewer, they have electricity that needs to be turned on. And the former code enforcement director said the way they would get squatters out of a house is shutting off the water. So you could have the power shut off, have the heat shut off, but they'd still stay there. But if you shut the water off, they'd leave. But there are a lot of empty houses out there. And I can tell you out of common sense that an empty house is what's called a creative nuisance. No, attractive nuisance. Like years ago, Rockford Files, somebody climbed up on his trailer near the beach because they had a telescope so they could roll watch. And they slipped and fell and got hurt, and they sued Rockford, and they won. And that is a real thing. But we're in our own little way trying to fill in the gaps for people. And when you see a 20-something excited about an orange juicer like you won the lottery, I'm thinking, my gosh, how does he even know what that is? It's like, I can make my own fresh orange juice. And we've had so many times when somebody needs something and it appears. The Brick Church we do a lot of work with is called the Storehouse. They take in clothing, they sort it by size. They have a shower in there now for people. And before they moved into that building, they're up on Hammond Street. And God rest his soul, Pastor Chris, who passed away, said, we have a larger volunteer needs a larger walker. Now I know it's a bariatric rollator walker. I believe it was the next day I was up at the warehouse. I'm talking to the volunteers. Out of the corner of my eye, I'm looking. I keep looking and looking. It's a rollator. It's exactly the kind that they were looking for. I said, who's walker rollator? Oh, that just got dropped off. That's nice. Put it in my car, please. We've had so many things. We had an oxygen concentrator donated to us right after the post went out on social media. we put posts out for more expensive things. We had a gentleman, a fire department, called us up. Sadly, he passed away before he received it, but he was stuck in his bathroom for 3 days. They rescued him out of there. They were going to get a lift chair. I went into Sam's Club and I said, look, it was nighttime. I said, can I talk to a manager on duty? Sure. How can we help you? Can you sell me one of those at cost? Sure. Fire department picked it up. Sadly, the gentleman passed away, but I said to the fire department, you know, you want to keep it? Oh, yeah, we always have people looking for them.
It's interesting. So there's a combination of things going on that I find fascinating. One is the job skills that you had as a realtor and all the volunteer work you did in the past, how that all went into helping you be a better volunteer for other organizations.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the things that people donate that just in time for you to use them. It's like it all kind of comes together.
And here's the wacky thing. We are so lucky because we've had a couple of people say, oh, we should sell the warehouse, get a regular quote-unquote warehouse. But the setting is nice. We're not paying a penny on it for rent or lease or anything like that. And the fun thing is one of the University of Maine students that we worked with, we've had technical writing classes. We've had full classes. One of them went on to a site that has all the furniture banks for the United States and Canada. It's called furniturebanks.org. They went online, and as I said, you know, go and check out all these different websites, furniturebanks, plural.org. And apparently these small world stories happen all the time. I've had them in my personal life. I was in a basement apartment in Boston. Really quick, I got back from seeing Road War, and I was lamenting to a neighbor who lived upstairs, I miss Maine, I miss having my car. So it doesn't sound like you're from Maine. We go back and forth. We're both from the same part of New Jersey. And I said, what's your last name? He goes, Honig. And I'm like, it's like, what? What's so funny? Well, before I was a twinkle in my parents' eye, my parents' spouses ran off together, leaving them behind. There's a lady attorney named Ruth Honig. I was born in 61, so it's like 59, 58. And here it is, 82 or 83. And I said, her name is Ruth Honig. Guy goes, white as a sheet. He goes, that was my grandmother. I finally sat down and I've written out a bunch of them. And we had a quote-unquote psychic in our office building where I used to work over in Brewer. And we were talking one day online and she said, you're a magnet. I'm like, what? She said, you're a magnet. I'm like, okay. A lot better name than I was given in high school.
Well, it fits into an interesting concept from Kurt Vonnegut's world that I'm familiar with, too, this idea of a caress, which is people coming into your life for no particular reason, and yet they define your life, and they just are a part of what you're supposed to be doing with your life. This unknown mission brings these people into your life.
And I can tell you, and it's so funny, where my first designated broker thought I was nuts to talk about the ghosts at the museum that I used to work at. My father, when I was a kid, I was picked up. I used to walk home from school. I was a little over a mile away from school. One of the family friends showed up, just waving me down. It's a little stampede of kids are coming out of middle school or grade school. I said, I need to give you a ride home. Why? I walk. No, you need to come with me. She wouldn't tell me what was wrong until we're almost to the house. Then she blurts out, your father's very sick. He's in the hospital. They think he'll be okay. And I'm like, oh, my God, what's wrong? He had two heart attacks.
Oh, my God.
My mother was crying, which is very rare. He had two out-of-body experiences. First one, he says, Roy Pleasant, he felt like he was going down the slide into the pool at Coney Island, like when he was a kid. He said it was great until he was a king of the flirts. He said, until his cute little nurse started wailing away in my chest with her fist. He said, but before that, I'm floating above, looking down at my body. The doctor's mopping, his brow is being mopped off by the nurse before she starts hitting me. Second heart attack shortly afterwards. My mother and Tom Ward, our Presbyterian minister, were several rooms away, having the discussion, oh my God, what's going to happen if Bill dies? They bring him back. What does he do? He recites the conversation back to them word for word. He's one of a half a dozen people I've known who have been flatlined. And I have a strong feeling that the spirit doesn't go away. I don't think it's oxygen deprivation. The reason I say that is the fact that when people are resuscitated from trying to take their own life, no bright lights, no long-lost relatives, no incredibly euphoric feeling. Pain, horrible images, suffering, the whole nine is completely different. And it's just fascinating. I've had so many things happen in my life that I know the chance of coincidence are pretty nil. There's a Police song, if you listen to the lyrics sometime or look them up on Google's Synchronicity one. It talks about Spiritus Mundi and how things connect. And when I went to Angus King's first inauguration, he put it very well. He said, the state of Maine is like one big small town. So you start talking to somebody, you're going to have a connection. You're going to know somebody in common. So, and that's why we've been so blessed with Welcome to Housing. Thank God they're keeping Penobscot Job Corps program open. It's one of the most incredible programs. It's no drugs or alcohol. These kids are smart kids. They're getting in education. They're getting their lives on track. The kids have every excuse to mess up and go down the path of dealing or overdosing. I'm just so happy that it was preserved. I really am. And we've had volunteers from just about every organization around here. We were trying to find out, now this is a national problem. How do you find people during the day, during the week, that are able-bodied, that they're working? We work with men from the men's house at Wellspring. They come out and they help us. And the amazing thing is, they work hard. They never once complain. The only wackiest thing they ever did, we're getting a whole bunch of mattresses from and box springs from the hotel at the casino. I get there, and two or three of them decide they're going to climb up into the dumpster. There's like pillows and stuff. Guys, you can get stuff that hasn't been in a dumpster. So here's a story about that particular run where we had all those mattresses. Lady calls me up. Actually, no, she was on the Facebook page for the neighborhood, Tree Streets neighborhood. Her husband needed a wheelchair. We contacted her, got her a wheelchair. Then she was describing something because he has a hard time getting to the bathroom. You need a commode. Got her a commode. A day or so later, I hate to keep asking, but any chance of us getting like a queen-size mattress? I'm like, that's too funny. She goes, why? I said, well, there's a whole bunch of them over at the hotel that we're going to go pick up. Her son and the son's friend came over and picked it up. Come to find out that her husband had been in an accident over 12 years ago. The corner of the box spring was collapsing. Poor guy had a hard enough time sleeping. And he was sleeping on a bed that was sloping. And he had to fight to keep from falling out of bed. So they got a walker, a commode, and a mattress in the box spring. You know, and when we can help people with stuff like that, that's money that they can use on things like food and rent and whatever they need. And I just thank God every day I'm not in that situation. I'm very empathetic. It breaks my heart to see some of the situations. We had one man with two sons, and his wife actually left them. She kept reenlisting into the service. And our original place, there was a clock coffee table. The top of the table was a big clock, and this little boy had Asperger's. It's on the spectrum. Keep going on and on and on about how he wanted this thing. And the father, honest to God, God love him, he was so nice. He explained it to him. The kid was about 8 years old. He goes, okay, you've seen where we're going to move to, right? Goes, yeah. Where would we put that? Oh, you're right. Then he said something I will never forget. It's okay to be needy. It's not okay to be greedy. I'm like, I'm quoting you.
But that is a great thing to have in life. I know that I've heard of conversations that Kurt Vonnegut had that I'm fortunate that I know that I've got enough. Mm-hmm. And that is something that unfortunately people that have significantly more don't always realize.
Exactly. And the thing is that I have nothing against people being successful,
right,
and making money. But there's so many people now that are hoarding it, that aren't giving back. LeBron James is getting all these kids into college. They have good grades, but they don't have the money to get into college. He's getting them into college. Shaquille O'Neal's got an MBA. He goes out once in a while to places like Walmart, finds a kid that doesn't have a bike. Pick out a bike. We'll go get a bike. Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. Years ago, when he was still alive, God rest his soul, They did a couple of, we had these paper mache masks, and they decorated them to have on an auction on the symphony. Okay, so here he's got Paul Newman's Own, salad dressings and all stuff. Profits from that are going to nonprofits. Narragansett number one, they won a Powerball for $5 million. I think it was in 2001. Like, what are we going to do to all of that money? We're gonna give it out to charities around Buxton. I still laugh because Buxton's not a very big community. They're based out of Barnes Mills, and we apply. I've been telling people for years, over 10 years, you ought to apply for Narragansett Number One Foundation. We finally applied, and we got $20,000 from them.
And for your organization, I mean, we could do a shout out to the Stephen and Tabitha King Foundation, because they had a significant impact on getting your organization in a solid position, correct?
They did. They ended up giving us a $50,000 grant. 25 bought the house. I got the buyer's title insurance, because I used to be a realtor and I knew to get buyer's title insurance. And then we put the rest of the money into heat pumps, and we did PEXR plumbing rather than trying to redo the plumbing. We hooked up two bathrooms. We put in a great big sink, one of those utility sinks with a sprayer, because a lot of times we'll get coffee makers. And they're perfectly good. They just need a little vinegar and water and some cleaning. And my wife and I have a theory about Stephen and Tabitha King, is that they struggle. I don't know if everyone knows this, but the story goes is that he was working on Carrie. It's about a young woman having her first menstrual cycle. He got frustrated. Here's a guy that's obviously not going to have a menstrual cycle ever. And he got frustrated writing it. He threw it out. His wife, his better half, she fished it out of the garbage, looked it over. She said, this is really good. They've been together forever, and they went through some struggles. She's originally, I believe, from the Old Town area. So we were really, really lucky. And the thing that blows my mind, I know how many places they give to, but the other thing that blows my mind is they don't plaster their name on everything. They built a baseball field, a stadium, here in Bangor, and they named it after a young man, I believe, who had cancer. But, you know, I'm just amazed what can be done with money in a good way, and it doesn't take a lot of money. We've done an amazing job, and we get a lot of respect in the community. I went into Martin's. I'll bring the stuff to the register. I'll get the manager on duty. You know, we get a discount. We bought a whole bunch of no-stick fry pans. They did a miscount. We had several more. I brought an associate back out to count them out, and I came back in, and I said, we owe you some more money. We did the miscount. He says, don't worry about it. And I'm walking away. He said one word, and it made me so proud. He goes, integrity. Wow, thank you. You know, we've been contacted by the Red Cross numerous times. After I had my open heart surgery, I was in recovery. They had to open me up twice because they ripped a graft when they began to have pacemaker wires. I got a call from FEMA. A couple with two kids, I think a one-year-old and an 11-year-old, were in Globe, Arizona. Wildfires obliterated their home. They got rehomed all the way out Route 9 in Otis. They both had jobs. They were both able to get themselves moved to Otis. But by the time they got here, they just didn't have money for beds, for couch, for kitchen table. And we filled in the blanks. And man, it's a good feeling when you do something good. And it kills me when I see all the negative vitriol out there and the attitudes towards the administration has towards people who are struggling, the lack of empathy. And you see people waving Bibles who would, you know, spit on a homeless person or put up barriers so a homeless person can't sleep under a bridge. I don't know if you've seen those in some places. Right. They have spikes. It's like, that's sick. There's a great meme that says, if one chimpanzee in the jungle hoarded all the bananas to the point where all the other chimpanzees are starving, scientists and zoologists would be doing a study. But when humans do it, they put them on the cover of Forbes magazine.
Yeah. So I noticed that your organization certainly helps veterans, and that seems to be something that happens in America a lot. But what impressed me more was that you're also helping immigrants. You're helping people who were formerly incarcerated. You're helping people who, as you just said, have gone through a personal tragedy and just need that help. and looking at them as human beings that just need help. And once you get them back on their feet, they seem to do so much better.
And a lot of them come back around and support us and so forth. One of the people, we're part of several different groups. We sit in on Main Reentry Network whenever we can. It's every Tuesday from 9:30 to 11. And I didn't realize after I helped my friend with a pre-release years ago, they closed the pre-release. And back then, if you were coming out of corrections, you could not go to a support group. There's support groups for everything, for grieving parents, for Al-Anon, whatever. I'm thinking, my God, that you get out of prison, you have to fill out a job application. Have you been convicted of a felony? Yep. And then you have to explain yourself. So come to find out, this group is statewide. They have people that are still incarcerated that are getting education, they're getting set up. There's some, and I believe it's the Supermax in South Warren that they work with pets. They train, I believe they're service dogs that they train. You know, they're adding this humanity, and it's a great group. It's attended like 60 people every, by the time we get through the introductions, that's like 45 minutes in. We're also part of the Maine Veterans in Need, which is statewide. We're also part of the Maine, you love this, Maine HVAC, Maine Homeless Veterans Action Committee. They meet weekly. There's another networking group that's veterans in this area. The group up in Aroostook County, there are two of them up there, County Cares and the Aroostook Veterans Alliance. They help everybody now. I was always hoping that they would. COVID started, we had a ton of stuff. If anyone out there has ever been to, not the new Stonington Furniture, but in Rockland, there's a place called Stonington Furniture. And they used to stack the furniture up to the ceiling. That's what our warehouse was like. They had a trucking company that one of their people worked with called Falcon. They dropped off, I think it was like a 52-foot trailer. We spent the week filling it with furniture and all kinds of stuff. And they came down with the tractor and pulled it back up to the county. We made friends for life. And we are hoping to get more word out there. I want to get out to the realtors because it's a great way to make connections. And when a house goes up for sale, there's always something that the people don't want to take with them and the people buying the house don't want. We had one lady give us a sofa love seat, bright, bright, colorful, almost like a Peter Max print of flowers. And she's all apologetic. It's like, oh, it's so loud. I'm like, you know what? People we're helping aren't going to care. We have bedspreads that can throw over it because this is going to beat the daylights out of sitting on the floor on milk crates or whatever. And it's just fabulous because out of all the years we've done this, we only had one lady, and she came with DJ Samuelin one day. DJ was one of our first volunteers. She wouldn't take anything. She could not swallow her pride long enough to take anything. Now, DJ came out of nowhere. He's college age, great volunteer. His father teaches caseworkers at the University of Maine, Augusta, Bangor campus. And I get this email. I'm thinking, oh, gosh, you know, DJ's schoolwork must be suffering something. Oh, no, no. He loves it. We love the fact that he's doing it. Whatever he can do to help, let us know. And they've been a longtime supporter. As a matter of fact, he was one of the people that calls me up. His father called me up. He goes, got a check for you. Do you want us to, you know, drop it in the mail or drop it? Oh, I'd drop it in the mail. I don't know if you remember back when the government gave out $1,200 per person.
Yeah.
I'm like Kevin in Home Alone. Open up the thing. Open up the envelope. There's a check for $2,400. Said, I'll post it. We thought it would be better served to give this to you. We have another donor who gives us $1,000 every year. One year, I get an extra $3,000 check. Another little post-it. It's a different volunteer. And he says, I really don't want to pay taxes on this. And the way that we found him, he used to give tours over at the Mount Hope Cemetery. And as a museum director, we were collecting toiletries and stuff at Shaw's downtown with a Upward Bound Kids. We were only there for like 3 hours. We didn't get a lot of stuff. Next thing I got, I get a check for $250. Then I get a check for $750. I'm like, where is he coming up with this money? And ever since then, $1,000 every year. Apparently, he gets a dividend or a trust fund or something. We had one family were giving us furniture, laces. Let me have your 501c3 letter. Gave it to her. Her husband and his siblings have a trust. I think it was like a $6,000 check out of the blue. It's like, wow. So And we haven't really even gotten most of the low-hanging fruit. We're now Chamber of Commerce members. I've been involved with them. I was a volunteer of the year back in 96 or 97. I used to work on the membership committee. And there's so many businesses out there that once they understand what we do and who we are, it'll be a great help. It really will. Because we run on about $25,000 a year because we're all volunteer. And what we're going to try to do is eventually get an endowment built up so that interest can pay for a part-time staffer and can pay for a lot of things like insurance. Because insurance, of course, will not donate. Neither will water and sewer. Water and sewer aren't bad, but insurance is quite pricey. But we have liability insurance. We always have in case somebody gets hurt. To give you an idea, the soapbox derby in Old Town went away. I was told the reason it went away is one of the soapbox cars went over a hay bale, either hit a lady or almost hit a lady. She threatened to sue, and they shut it down.
Oh.
So, you know, we're being very careful. And one of my biggest jobs is making sure that people are safe and don't get hurt. Three things I learned from example from my father: never panic, never get embarrassed, and listen to your gut. And honest to God, Max, every time I listen to my guy, I'm thinking I'm putting something off. I should tackle that. And then when I go to take it on, somebody out of the blue comes along that has what we need or has the answers that we need or offers to sponsor. And it's like, holy goodness, there's something greater out there. It's just not random. And my theory is, sounds as wacky as it sounds, you know, you meet people and you immediately connect with them.
Right.
Brain waves are alpha theta waves. Alpha and theta waves are radio waves. When people say, oh my gosh, you're going to get tumors from your cell phone. No, because a cell phone is picking up radio waves that have always been there. Going back to prehistoric times, they've always been there. Mankind just figured out a way to hitchhike onto them so we can communicate. It's funny, but I would love people to know if they'd like to get involved in volunteering. If you have somebody that has to do community service, and it's fun. When you can hand somebody something that has jack squat and see the look on their face like, oh my gosh, I get to sleep on a mattress. We have had adults come in and get excited about getting a fork, knife, and spoon because they have one fork, one knife, one spoon that they're sharing with their kids.
Wow.
They have to eat their meals in shifts. It's like, come on, this is America.
And now they can have the traditional family meal and be able to talk and chat. And yeah.
We had, not to keep you too long, we had one guy, there was a caseworker, went to check on a client. They weren't in their apartment. They hear a weird noise around the back of the building. You go around the back of the building, there's their client with a neighbor, and they have a can of food. And what are they doing with a can of food? They're sitting on the pavement with a great big rock in the can of food, trying to open the can of food. We had to get our heat fixed at our old location. While I was waiting for the HVAC guy, I go to the dollar store. I find these nice can openers. Now they're $1.25, but with the padded handles for $1. We buy them by the caseload. People get food, they can't open the damn food.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if people need something, we'll find it. We'll either do social media or we'll purchase it.
I have seen a lot of requests go out over social media that seem to be very effective for that. So that is a very good thing. I did want to bring up that there's this discussion, this thread of discussion that goes on about doing things at that local level and getting to know your neighbors and just how much your organization has been able to benefit from people learning about you within your neighborhood. And so often we look to the federal government to provide all of our needs. And I think in reality, what we really need is to look to our neighbors and work with our neighbors.
It like they say, it takes a village. What's really interesting is how many things from ancient times, like mentoring. If you wanted to be a sword maker, if you wanted to be this or that, you find somebody that's really good at it and you say, can I learn from you? And when people have a skill, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be happy to show it off. That's how I've learned a lot of my skills, and I didn't go to college. I learned desktop publishing from a lady that used to work at a print shop. You know, I like to learn, and it's amazing what can be done and how many people are out there that have these skills. And I learned a long time ago with volunteers, a good example is if you're building a committee, don't assume that the person working at the bank wants to be the treasurer. Find out what people like to do outside of work. And we have a gentleman who just retired from Old Town Housing. And I love the text message he sent me one day. I was with him for 30 years and he's not that old even. I don't know if he started when he was 12 or whatever, but he sent me a text. He said, I'm so glad I'm retired now because now I can do what I want to do and not what I have to do. What right. he wants to do is help us. And he's been helping like incredibly, doing a lot of things. He's been getting some of the Wellspring men up to the warehouse and to help with the moving when I can't because of my fall that I had recently. So it's just amazing how people will pitch in. And when you really need something, honest to God, people come through. And there's a sense of community up here, Max, that blows my mind. And one of the big factors, I think, is the fact a lot of the people around here that get involved in nonprofits have something in common. A lot of them come from Aroostook County. A lot of the people in media got their start at HOU up in Holton. You know, the Mike and Mike, Scotty Moore, Brad Buck, Paul Dupuis, who I knew from years ago down in Holton, up in Holton, is now owns a station down in, I believe it's Bar Harbor. And he and I met in Holton years ago and had a whole shelf of crap fall down onto the microphone when we were in the middle of a remote broadcast. We were in the back of Pizza Hut. And I had to grab the mic and I said, if you could have seen what you just heard, it sounded like Fibber McGee's Closet. But there's so many good people out there. And I would love to see the day that we go from, if it bleeds, it leads to, why not have Steve Hartman's sort of stories at the top of the news? Because if you watch enough news, you will get depressed. You'll think that the world's coming to an end, and it's not. And I wish more people could work with the college students and the high school students and the elementary kids that I work with. Oh, that great program, Junior Achievement. Worked with the Junior Achievement kids, and they picked out of all the things that they could put into the empty storefront, they picked the animal shelter. You know, and it's funny because when you're little kids, positive, 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 and something happens along the way, whether it's middle school and the racing of the hormones, but, you know, nowadays it's a good thing to be involved. When I would get involved in volunteering, I might as well put a bullseye on my back. You know, guess what? Chris has got a bunch of new nicknames because he offered to help do something or he was fundraising for something. You know, oh, you're doing it. It'll look good. It's like, no, it's fun to do. Don't just do something. Sit there.
And I'm so glad that you brought up the idea of taking the news cycle and getting away from that sensationalism and the bleed lead and all that, because there are so many more really wonderful stories about humanity.
And I loved years ago, Vladimir Horowitz, a concert pianist, I believe from Austria or Germany, being interviewed by Barbara Walters. And he looks at her and he goes, people in your country, they thrive on bad news. And it really took her back. I'll never forget that interview. And you look at people when they're fighting cancer. When people are fighting cancer and they're doing the probiotic diet and they keep a positive attitude, they live longer. They go into remission longer. Sometimes they even get better. There's a greater power out there. I'm not a religious person. I like what Gil Grissom said in CSI years ago. He was talking to a Catholic priest. He said, I believe in God, but I don't believe in religion. There are a lot of great churches out there, and we work with all of them. But growing up, I watched a lot of churches basically say, we're the way. It's our way and nobody else. It's like, no. My mother ran into a lot of people in New Jersey when my sister got married. Her first husband happened to be Jewish, and my sister converted. A whole bunch of people that my mother thought were nice, normal people turned out to be anti-Semitic. It's like hate and ignorance, and that is just absolute waste of time. It really is. It's like when I was a newscaster and Capital News Service feed by Mal Larry had a great story. Crime is a negative income. The time you lose away from work in court, incarcerated, legal fees, you're not making any money. It's like eating celery. You want to lose weight? Eat nothing but celery because you're burning more calories chewing it than you're taking in. Money trails.
I'm glad you brought all that up too, because that is a significant reason for why I wanted to start Sacred Legions. One, I did want to get away from the negative news cycle stuff. And two, the idea that you have to be religious or anything to be good to me is such a myth. There are so many wonderful people out there, and it matters not whether they have a deity that they follow or they do not have a deity that they follow. The thing that's important is, how are you with other people? How are you treating your fellow human beings?
And here's the fun part. When you hear the expression, what goes around comes around, people usually use it in a negative way. Oh, they were mean to somebody. You know, God's going to get them. I always loved, I stopped counting at 50 of the poems I wrote, and I used to write Valentine's poems every year. As a matter of fact, Pat was a recipient a few years. And I talked about how I liked being in the good graces of women, because hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And good karma happens. We have it happen with Welcome to Housing all the time. The time we had our pipes freeze, we now have a guy that worked in Old Town Housing. He went in and he took care of it. The rest of us would be like, oh, well, wow, what a mess. We need to call a plumber. He went and fixed it. And I'm like my father. My father, when he finally passed away at 84, was not afraid of death. I'm not afraid of death. My only fear is dying in a stupid way.
Makes
like,
sense.
Like, it's like Dennis Leary talking about the guy down on the street and the woman dropped her poodle off of the observation deck of the Empire State Building. He said, from then on, he was known as the Poodle Man. But there's a great expression that I think it's Native American originally. If you knew your life was going to end in the next few moments, would you want to be remembered for what you were doing then? Wow. You know, live each day like it's your last.
We're coming to the end of our time. I do want to do a quick shout out to, you mentioned that you sent a Valentine card to my former co-host Pat LaMarche, and we're both mutual friends of Pat LaMarche from interactions we've had, probably for the same reason. She's just a magnificent
incredible
person
lady
overall. So I wanted to make sure that everybody knew the Pat that you were talking about for the Valentine. I also am very pleased that she put us together. And I've got this thing of, I really want to meet all the people that I'm interviewing, and I've had the opportunity to meet several of them. And I know that I'll be up in Maine over the course of time. I think I'm going to be up there in July, definitely. So I wouldn't be surprised if I try to look you up.
Come in visiting and pick some raspberries from our patch. We lucked out. We bought a house that was an ice business years ago, and actually have pictures of it with the original family in front of it from 1915, wow. About.
Such wonderful things. Well, I want to thank you again, Christopher, for being on the podcast. And I do look forward to seeing you if I ever make it up to Maine.
Ditto. Thank you, Max.
Remember, you can listen to our uplifting interviews from secular saints on your favorite podcast service or at sacredlegions.org. While you're at the website, we hope you'll draw inspiration to practice secular sainthood yourself by exploring our resources page of volunteer and self-care organizations endorsed by our featured secular saints. You can also join our official Patreon page for free by clicking the link at the top of our homepage. There, you'll find bonus content and special notices specially made for the Sacred Legions family. If you have views about the podcast, we would love to hear from you by using our Send Us a Message form at the bottom of our website. Finally, Sacred Legions wants to remain ad-free, but what we do isn't free. So if you love our inspirational guests and the promotion of volunteerism and self-care, how about buying us a cup of coffee by clicking the merchandise link at the top of the website, then selecting the support link or official merch options available there. And thank you, because your kind contribution will help to keep this program going long into the future.
Thanks for listening to Sacred Legions, hosted by Max Goler. Original music by Jamie Callan. To hear archived episodes, visit our website, www.sacredlegions.org, or check us out on your favorite podcast service. You will learn more about people behaving decently in indecent times and about the nonprofit organizations they support. Don't forget to check out our merchandise shop. Sacred Legions is a production of Sacred Legions, LLC.